interview with Dr. William Royce, interviewer for Mosaic Math, Washington, D.C., 11th January, 1991. Okay, Mr. Royce, why don't you begin with a little bit of background, your educational background, and how you began your work with the United States government.
Okay. Really, the first thing I'd like to start out with, which ties in mostly with my connection with education in Iran, and really my connection with Iran outside of government is much more extensive than with government, but I will touch on that. The question almost anyone who I've run across, you know, tends to ask people like me, who are Americans, who are involved with whatever Middle East country or foreign country, in this case Iran, is how did you get involved, how did you get started? My case is certainly an improbable one. My involvement was totally by accident. It was nothing like so many of sort of my generation of Americans who got into Iran sort of by going to, let's say, Peace Corps first or even Foreign Service first. When I got involved in Iran was my freshman year as an undergraduate was at the Foreign Service School at Georgetown University here in Washington. I came from New Jersey, where I'd grown up, and going to high school, and it was a whole new environment. I knew I was sort of vaguely interested in some sort of international career, wasn't sure what. I'm not sure I am even today. But in any case, as it happened, I got to know a student. Actually, he wasn't my roommate the first year, a student who came from Iran. In those days, this is 1961, there really, as you know yourself, relatively few Iranian students in the States. It was nothing like what happened, let's say, 10 years later in the early 70s. At Georgetown, it turned out in those days there were about, if I remember, maybe three Iranian students in the Foreign Service School of the Institute of Languages who was with us. I got to know, we were in classes, seemed very pleasant, was a guy called Hossein Nafisi. And we got to become very good friends. And I remember that first year during, I guess, Thanksgiving, we invited him up to New Jersey. And then over the Christmas holidays, Christmas vacation, we invited him to our home in New Jersey. Actually, we went from New Jersey to Chicago, where my mother's family lived, and so he had a chance to see a bit of the country and a variety of things. We got to know each other very well, and toward about April, I suppose, he suggested, well, he said, you know, my father had, you know, was really, thought it was very nice of you to invite me and so forth, so what we propose is this, would you like to? If you can pay your way, we can put you up, and my father can get you a job teaching English at Iran American Society in Tehran. And so, would you be interested? I talked over with my parents. There was no way the money I was going to earn teaching wouldn't cover the airfare, but my parents helped me out, so I said, okay, I'll take you up on this.
What year was this?
This was 1962 now. As you see, we met in the academic year that started in 1961. Now we're going at the end of the first year. And so we flew by, actually Hossein, something came up, and he had came out a little later. I went a little earlier, and went out there in the summer of 1962 and arrived in sort of around midnight, I remember, in Tehran Airport. In many ways, I was lucky to have had such a long involvement in two things. I was really lucky in, I think, getting perception about Iran, or three things, and I might interject this here. One is that I was able sort of continuously over a very long period to be familiar with the country. The Iran in 1962 was so different from Iran of 1968. which was even so much more different than 1974, these three periods when I was there, socially, economically, politically. The whole thing was very different. I was very lucky in two other ways. One is this long scope. The second, that I was able, you know, from the beginning, because my initial connection was a personal relationship, not an official or business, that from the beginning I got to know Iranian families and sort of the family setting, as opposed to the formal setting that all Iranians, you know, except really those who are married to, all Americans except those who really married to Iranians don't get into. And third, and I think a lot of this was due to efforts and plannings of my friend's father, who was the host, that from early on I was able to meet all kinds of people.
What was his father's name?
I'll get to that in one second. This is just a quickie, okay? But the third thing was that I was able to, from the beginning, to meet and get to know all kinds of Iranians, educated inside, educated outside, non-educated, farm people, city people, which again was sort of an opportunity that a lot of foreigners in Iran haven't had and don't have. Okay, now, a lot of this had to do, or a lot of the success of this first trip and my interest had to do with this friend of mine's father, because this friend of mine's father was a man called Habib Nafisi, who was very much involved in, who was, I'll say, a very strange bird, as Iranians go. He had was one of the Iranians who was sent abroad during Reza Shah to either Montpellier or Toulouse in France. He studied engineering. Then, before coming back to Iran, he thought he decided he wanted to go to the States. So he came to the States, and very unlike what lots of Iranians abroad did from sort of an educated background or a fairly well-off background, was that he got a job as a factory worker in an automobile factory. And that sort of gives you a very strange bird. Now, he was very, very strong personality, rather domineering type, but practically everything he did was an experiment. So in a way, for better or for worse, I was an experiment. Now, at the time, I thought it was sort of a pain, but because I became aware of this very early on, because you know, I found that this first trip, when I was pretty strictly under his control, that you know, that things were very well planned, but the planning sort of worked. Now, in those days, in the early 60s, as I said, Iran and Tehran was very different from Tehran of what I knew later. It turned out that something had come up, and Hossein, who was supposed to be there too, didn't show up until the last month of the 3 months. So I was on my own for the first 2 months. My routine was this. Well, I taught at Iran-America Society, which at that time was in Khiabani Shah. And David Nall, who's now here in Washington, was the head of that. He was a Foreign Service officer and was very helpful to me then, and really has always continued to be very helpful to me. I thought he was really one of the most impressive U.S. government people I've ever met. Involved with Iranian things. In any case, so what happened was, since Hossein wasn't here, Nafisi felt that, you know, being put into an Iranian family immediately might be too stressful, so he found an American family, an American with AID whom he knew, and I, who lived very close to where he lived, where Nafisi lived, and I stayed with them. And my routine was this. I guess the first day he drove me down, before I go on a bit, I'd said earlier that one thing that's always surprised me is life in the early 60s was so different from life even the late 60s or the early 70s, at least the life I saw. In life in the early 60s, most people who could afford it moved out of, most people I knew, and regarded all sorts of economics, had winter places in Tehran and summer places to the north of Tehran. And almost everyone seemed to, they would pack up in late spring and move back when school started. This was a routine. Even amongst the quite wealthy ones, or at least the ones with old families, and the Shemron places at that time were pretty primitive. Primitive is an exaggeration, but it was nothing like the marble and plaster work and all the glitter of the late 60s and the 70s and late 70s. And it was a very strange and different environment. Well, some people just more or less camped out. In any case, in Efesis, had a place. It had a swimming pool. It was nice in Shemron, but really quite simple. And we used to, and the place I stayed was close by with this American family. So the first day he drove me down, I went to Run American Society. They were very helpful. I'd never taught English before, but I managed. But again, as I said, Mr. Nafisi had quite a few things planned for me. But one thing he thought that, I think 3 days a week I was to have lunch at the Polytechnic, which he was the head of at the time. And that was very, very interesting because, I was in lunch with the students. So I got to meet, very often I suppose students he wanted me to meet, but students who were, tended to be, I suppose, middle class, quite a few provincial students. Got to know a lot of these people quite well. Again, he always, I was quite, sort of watched to make sure that, the ones I was with, he approved of one way or another.
What was your impression of the attitude of
this is what I wanted
that you met?
Well, I said one of the most interesting things, I've taught this framework of changes in the three periods. The change in the early 60s, this was the summer of 62. This is between, now people were still talking about in 60 or 61, when Iqbal was president of the university, there was trouble with Tehran University, right?
Right.
So this was still very much alive, and I would say very much in the early 60s.
This was during Adam's premiership, right?
Yeah, this is, no, it's during Dr. Amini. When I was there, it was Dr. Amini.
Late 1962.
When I was there with Dr. Amini. Right. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Amini was somehow related to my host, so, I got to know Dr. Amini going way back then. And his son, I got to know them quite well.
In that period?
Yeah. And because this Nafisi's sister or aunt or something was married to, no, his uncle was married to Amini's sister. Mm-hmm. Which is relatively close, in these situations. So in any case, as I said, the one thing that struck me at the early 60s was the students were extremely politicized. They were extremely politicized. People would openly talk about democracy and against the Shah, not so much about Mossadegh, really, but just against the dictatorial government, against Savak. If I remember correctly, this was shortly before this. Remember, on the pretext of illegal elections, the majlis had been closed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it was a period when people really talked about these things. Now, in that period, people didn't really talk about the two-day too much. because I think there was very, as you know, there was very strong control. They came down hard, let's put it this way, in the early 60s about people with Soviet connections. Your groups like the sort of armed struggle groups had not yet materialized. Generally, it was this loose thing of the National Front that nobody quite realized what it was, except it probably was better than what they thought it was better than what they had. Bazargan was emerging then. Not so much, though I remember people like Nafisi used to making jokes about him, and his fanaticism when they were students. You know, they used to say he used to go down to the River Seine and fill his aftabe because it had to be from Abekur and stuff like that. But other than that, the interest in Bazargan centered a lot around just more his democratic side and his goodness than his Islam. I don't remember his Islamic side being served in conversation. If you remember, in that, when Iqbal was one thing that they talked a lot about Bazargan, and I'm putting these details, I think this is just if you're interested.
Sure.
One of the things that struck people about Bazargan then was and I remember Nafisi was very opposed to what they did when Iqbal was president of the university, I don't know when this was, 60 was it, or 61? President, and they had some riots at the university, and they came down very hard on the students.
That was before
1961,
I think.
It was before 61, about 60 maybe.
Yeah, even earlier than
okay.
Because 60...
Well, people were still talking about
56,
this. Well, people were still talking about this, that far back. And I remember a lot of people said that Bazargan, who was a professor at the time, I believe was arrested for a short time after this thing in the early 60s or late 50s. Protected students, hid students, So anyway, the thought amongst the students was quite, the students at the Polytechnic was quite, I'd say, pro-democratic, unsatisfied. There was a lot of ferment. The thing that was interesting, people talked about politics. Mm-hmm. When I came back in 1968, the atmosphere was extremely more oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
People were much more reluctant to talk about anything of substance until they knew you were pretty sure of you. But it was just a totally different thing. Now, of course, what intervened was the Kuntzai Khordad, which changed lots of things.
Right.
Okay, so then other days at lunch, okay, and what I'm doing is giving you a little bit of my the various environments, variety of environments I found myself mixed up in, which is really quite a shock coming from where I was coming from. Maybe 3 days a week I had lunch at Polytechnic, which was, reme polo and cutlet with no meat. But it was fun and good.
Cutlet with no meat?
Yeah, sort of Iranian. I'm sure there was little, but...
Shami.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, But then 2 weeks, 2 days a week, he had this strange idea. I guess he thought that 5 days a week at the Polytechnic would be too much. So 2 days a week, he was somehow involved, I don't know if he was on the board or what, with this French club, where Mr. Bakhtiar was very involved, the former prime minister. So 2 days a week then, he had privileges where I could go for a swim at the Faransé club and have lunch and meet sort of the right sort of people there, and so I'd have a broad view. Then the third type of people I came in contact with were my students at Iran America site, which were a very broad ranging from sort of intermediate English, from maybe third year high school kids up to 60-year-old wives of former ministers who had been abroad. So it was a fascinating thing. Also, the teachers were very interesting. Many of the teachers were wives, American wives of Iranians, who had been the teachers, mm-hmm. other than, let's say, myself, were really, and a couple, you know, professional teachers that traveled out, were a different type. One, the females, as I said, were, except for one or two Iranian women who'd been very well educated in the States, were American wives of Iranians, some already divorced who had chose to stay. Many, some with positive, some with very negative attitudes about Iran and Iranians, and particularly Iranian family life and social structure, attitude toward women. That was very interesting for me. The men, three or four Iranian men, were again a very different group, where I'd say very talented, very sensitive guys who were really fish out, you know, who were Iranians who had been abroad a long time and never quite fit back. One went on, I guess, to be a fairly successful actor. Another one always sort of played at being a poet. You must know this guy because he was in Medley and he was a palace, Adib Sultani, an economist. You don't know him?
Adib Sultani.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't... Here's someone says his brother was one of these guys. But anyway, so that was the third group. The students were very interesting. Now, I found, you know, as one would expect, the students more my age, and I suppose I was about 19 or 20 when I was really quite young when I started this, were very anxious to get to know me and invite me and so forth. So, of course, all of this had to be sort of the Fridays I wasn't doing something with Mr. Nafisi, mm-hmm. these 2 months before.
This period was after your college.
No, it's my first year of college.
First year of college.
Yeah, wow. Summer of first year of college. I met him at my first year of college. Because in some ways this first trip is one of the early, most interesting. That's why I'm sort of getting into some of this, maybe help you in later encounters to ask different questions. So I got to know some of these students very well, and they're really very different groups. Now, one group that I had been a constant recurring thing always is that always when I was teaching, one sort of students that would try to get, you know, really, they would say try, it would be very friendly, hospital, always invite me, and this goes back to this period, are students who are Baha'is. Mm-hmm. Okay. They sort of felt perhaps some alienation from their own culture, some interest as foreigners, also they're always out to prove their point. They got to know one guy, that was one group. Some others were just sort of ordinary people, some fairly well off, some not, but all sort of business background. A group who had, I guess, gone to school together, and they used to go, they got me in this routine of, you know, the Friday morning hike, and then tea and so forth, and used to go to Tajrish and coming back in the evening. And Mr. Nafisi was a full believer in all that, so he thought that was very healthy, and once he sort of checked these people out, he encouraged that. Then there was another one who was very interesting, who I'm not sure Nafisi was too enthusiastic about, but it was interesting, was one guy I got to know, a very bright guy, and I ran into him sort of by accident much later on. All I knew about him, that his father, I guess, had been a mullah when he was Iraqi, and his mother was Iranian, and he absolutely hated the clergy. Mm-hmm. Absolutely hated the clergy. And he had an aunt who lived a long time in...
This was one of your students?
Yeah. And he had an aunt who lived a long time in the States, and actually was got a medical degree at Columbia and everything. And so he said, well, look, why don't you... You know, sometimes on Friday nights, I might wait, come over to my aunt's and, so forth. Well, when his aunt was fasting, I don't know if she wasn't married. I don't know if she was divorced or widowed or what, but two things struck me. That first thing I didn't didn't ring a bell at the time, but the aunt's name was Dr. Kianuri. Okay. And the second thing is that despite the fact that this kid was always telling me about how awful the mullahs were in destroying Iran, is that there were pictures of mullahs all over the house. Okay, so along with pictures of Iranians at Columbia gathered for Nowruz in 1945 or something, it was very strange. But the aunt was very sophisticated, very Americanized. Then we got a lot of talking. I think I guess she was the sister of Kianuri, who is now in jail, and they're what, grandchildren or something of Sheikh Fazlunuri. So that was the mullahs. And she didn't seem to like the mullahs very much either, despite all these pictures. But I remember that was an interesting series of encounters.
Those were probably the family heirlooms.
Yeah.
On the wall.
Yeah. Then Nafisi himself had some people he wanted me to meet. One was a very bright Iranian kid who, I don't know what's happened to him, his father was a general or something, who studied in the States and was home that summer, and we used to do things together. And then he had a friend who had an American wife, and they had a place in Damavand, and we used to go there. So anyway, so I got a very broad spectrum as far as sort of official Americans or governed Americans. Well, let's go to Iranian attitudes toward Americans. I think Iranians very much in the early 60s, except for the Mossadegh thing that people really didn't talk about. I think people were still fairly naive about America and democracy and friendship toward Iran, generally, I would say.
In other words, you didn't at that
point. No, I didn't feel any hostility at all. Interest. This was a period too, though, remember, when Iran was still very, America was still quite novel for Iran. This is before television. This is a period where I doubt if there were 300 except for missionaries, AID, and a relatively small embassy and a cultural program. There were very few Americans in Iran at all. Maybe no more than 100 wives, and God knows how many husbands, practically no business Iran Americans. America still wasn't as associated with the Shah as it was later. There was really, in 62, there was no military presence really at all, practically. There was... when I was there, I mean, AID had a very point. Asli Chahar had been converted to AID, which was a very cutback program. So it was a very different thing. No, anti-Americanism wasn't a thing. Under David Nalvi, the Iran, one of the more interesting things I saw is through really, on the whole, very good leadership. The way the Iran-America side, and not so much from the English side, from the cultural side, was able to introduce things from the outside and also patronize talented people from the inside who wouldn't have had much of a chance in this very inbred Farhang-e-Hunar, Alai Palbud system, which was a very, I think, an inbred system. But under David Nall, this was just beginning. And it was just becoming a place where people sort of gathered. This was like maybe a year before they moved to Abbasabad. I've always thought myself that in many ways the move to Abbasabad was unfortunate because it was a lot further from the university, and in a way it sort of changed the economic socio profile of the clientele, so to speak. But then, you know, Americans I met, official or not, one of the family I live with, he was a technical education teacher, did his job and that was about it, didn't really get involved or mix in. David Nall, as I said, around Rex, I thought was awfully effective. and really over the years, you know, since the revolution, has been one of the very few Americans I've known who's really sort of stuck to his Iranian friends from many years before. And there was a couple of AID people I met through Nafisi, but I really didn't know them.
Apart from Tehran, were there any other cities where Iranian American society
At that time, I really, quite frankly, I really don't remember. I think they had them in Kermanshah.
Kermanshah?
Shiraz and Isfahan, that far back, but I really don't know. Yeah. Because, also, I want to go back to another image is that sometimes I think is helpful in sort of an oral history or interview or recollections, is sort of one's first impressions. Mm-hmm. And my first impressions of Iran were very, very strange. It happened that my plane arrived in the middle of the night. And as I said, they were living way up in Shamran. This was in Maribad then. This is before all these parkways and stuff. And the next, and a relative of their family had died, so Nafisi had to go to a khatm or something early in the morning. So he had asked this is sort of complicated too, that his, Hussein, this friend of mine's mother was dead at this point, and Nafisi had remarried. So he figured, too, once in a while, that he shouldn't take all the burden of me, that Hussein's relatives from his mother should also have the burden, too.
What was the burden?
You're taking care of me, yeah, right, you know.
Financially, too?
No, just,
I see.
You know how this is, Tanha Naboshe, Banomedoshte Boshe, you know. The routine.
Right.
So, better than not. So, he asked the guy, so same from his mother's side, had a relative who was very high up in Darbar, and to go in, so at midnight, we arrived, and some little guy in a funny uniform that I had no idea was arrived on the, it was sort of a dive bar servant, arrived on the plane and asked for me. And I said, I'm in, I don't know what's going on. And then they wanted my bags, and so, you know, there were about three or four of these little guys in their little uniforms with their things. Okay. But I didn't know what the hell was going on. And nobody else did either. I mean, even the Iranians on planes. So, yeah, as I said, I was in the 1890s or so. Off I went with these guys, and sort of on the runway was a jeep.
You didn't pass through the customs?
No. This is big stuff. And the custom was a jeep, and relative of my friend's was there in the jeep, and I didn't know any Farsi, and he knew only French, and my French was strictly high school, so but we were all chanté and everything, and there was a station where I had to carry my baggage, which didn't amount to much, so I was a little puzzled, because I didn't know quite who this guy was, and what all this was, and we went off to a hotel, like I said, the first night a hotel he owned, and I guess, you know, he had, it was very Darbari, I had all sorts of flowers, all sorts of fruit, and I didn't know what the hell was going on. And I went to sleep, and maybe an hour later, and this is, I was awakened by noises and foreign noises and foreign smells. And that was sort of my earliest recollection of Iran, you know, the people selling stuff and all the noise and how high noise level starts so much earlier than it does here, even in commuting, and the smells of the bread, and good smells and bad smells, and donkey smells, and all sorts of things. And this is sort of my first recollection of Iran. Mm-hmm. Now, that is... Okay, then Hussein came. Hussein came, then I left the American family I'd been staying with and moved in with them. We went first to Ramsar for about 2 weeks. Now, one of the big differences between Iran of the early 60s that I saw and Iran even in the late 60s, is that sort of in the higher levels, higher social levels, not really economic, but sort of social levels, Iran was really very limited, very restricted compared to what it was even in the late 60s. Now,
limited in what sense?
I'll expand in this. For example, really in the early 60s, except for Babelsberg, which was really just starting, Ramsar was sort of the place on the Caspian. Now, there was a hotel and villas. What really shocked me is most of the villas that I saw anyway in the early 60s, by American standards, were really crummy. You know, these are sort of concrete boxes or whatever, but these were villas and so forth. But, you know, in the life, everybody sort of knew everybody else. Met a lot of people that summer. I've sort of always known, you know, known ever since. A lot of people who were, you know, younger Iranians who were home from Europe or the States, and some cousins of my friends. Okay. So anyway, it was very nice. And this friend had, Hossein, had three younger brothers who were, I mean, much younger than he, who were sort of 7, 8, or 9 or something, very interested in things American. We had a very good time. But, you know, from, as I said, Ramsar was a very strange, in a way, resort then to what I was used to. As I said, everybody knew everybody else. At night they had sort of a, I don't know, a 1950s Italian quartet or something play at the casino, and that was about it. But it was, you know, and they'd have, I think every once in a while they'd have a foreign movie in the hotel ballroom or something. They weren't movies. It was really very, very, I don't know, how should I say, very remote and very different. Then we started traveling. We went to, usually Hossein and I traveled by ourselves around Iran, mostly by bus, in different places, in places where they didn't have relatives. Usually the vocational education people, because that's what his father was into. Also, a little aside, quite frankly, I practically didn't know what vocational education was. Mr. Nafisi was really convinced that this was the role Iran had to take for progress. So another thing I did before Hossein got there, I got tours, you know, compulsory tours of practically every type of vocational training school there was in the Tehran area, which was interesting too. Now, we went to, what was I say, in places where he didn't have relatives, we'd usually stay or be looked after by technical education people. First place we went to was Rash. I remember we got a tour of the Shilat and these various, there were several schools where orphans or something did handwork and stuff. And so it was really very interesting. Heavy on social projects and educational projects, this first tour of Iran. Then we went back to Tehran, then we went to Isfahan and to Shiraz. In Isfahan we were pretty much on our own and had a very good time. This was, you know, sort of pre-Abbas Shah Abbas Hotel, the Iran Tour Hotel. It was very sort of strange, sort of British colonial thing was the hotel in and we stayed there. Then we went on to Shiraz, and Shiraz was more interesting because on both sides of Hossein's family, he had relatives who had actually had more than both. He had lots of relatives, though none originally Shirazi, who sort of branches of the family or people had settled on Shiraz, because his father's brother's wife was the daughter of Ghavan. And the same father's brother's daughter was married to Dr. Ghavani, who had just come back from wherever he had studied and was sort of a young guy just sort of having culture shock and getting started in Shiraz. So we visited them, and sort of kept. And he had other relatives. We had a very good, got to visit a lot of old houses, a lot of old baths before these were opened up to the public. And that was very nice. And we didn't get to Mashhad on this tour. We came back and that was, the summer was over. It was a very novel and new experience for me.
Was it on the first foreign country that you had gone
no,
to?
No, I'd been to Europe. I'd traveled in Europe with my parents, and I'd traveled in Mexico, traveled in Canada, also stopped in Europe a bit on the way to this, to Iran. But the other countries might have initially seemed foreign, but Iran was much more different. I decided that I was really quite interested in the Middle East and so forth. So after that, really not much was offered on the Middle East at Georgetown. But the summer after that, the summer of 1963, University of Michigan had a summer program in Persian. So I actually started Persian. No, I started Persian in Georgetown. Sorry, in the summer of 63. And it was funny because at that point, that's when I met a lot of people, a lot of your contemporaries, because this was in the summer of 63 then.
In Washington again?
This was in Washington, mm-hmm. at Georgetown. Had and this is back when they had these summer workshops. And there was actually a Chinese-American woman who was a linguist who knew about Persian structure, and an Iranian woman who taught us. And the Iranian woman was Mina, the ex-wife of Majid Tehranian. Mm-hmm. So that was the summer I got a heavy dose of
Mina
Jahan, right.
And Jackie, the other one must have
Jackie. Jackie, yeah. Mm. She was a lousy teacher, but Mina was very good. Yes, right. And Jackie and Mina and Kayvan Tabari was here that summer working in the Library of Congress, and they gave us all sort of their own version of what was going on in Iran. It was all very interesting. And
you were finishing your undergraduate.
I was just in my second year of undergraduate. Mm-hmm. And then what happened, then also, and this will have to be a holdover to next time, because I think we're probably, one of the students, one of the few Iranian students at Georgetown, who knew, but I don't think was too cozy with the Majid Tehranian crowd, was a very peculiar, strange guy called Sadeh Gutzadeh. Okay. Hussein, whom Hussein got to know very well, because, oh, another thing is that Hussein was also related quite closely to Bazargan, and that I think his mother's mother was a cousin or something of Bazargan or something. And what's the long story? But in any case, so he had this connection. Somehow Gutzadeh knew this. And Hussein told me this much, much later, maybe a year or two ago, which really surprised me, is that, one was never sure where Gutzadeh was coming from, in politically, in sort of the saintly literature of sort of after his death or even after the revolution, his religious side, his piety and his, but quite frankly, I never saw that at all.
And did you get to know him?
Oh yeah, I knew very well. In fact, when I went to Iran in 68, and his, I had an introduction to his brother, and I used to have dinner with his brother and his brother's Swedish wife, etc., etc., all through. And I knew him quite well. I'd say socially anyway, I knew him very
well. What about his other colleagues or friends at that time?
His other colleagues and friends at that time, well, as I said, he said,
Yazdi or Chameron.
No, those, they didn't, this
they
was
free.
Yeah, they weren't here. And I don't know that early how close he was with them. That might have been a little later. The only guy, Iranian, he used to hang out with is the guy who would be considered very Tagluti, who was totally apolitical. but like the sort of the type of socializing that Sadek liked. And anyway, so getting back to this, and I'll sort of end on this, it's interesting because I'd always thought that, you know, we knew that Sadek was anti-Shah. This was the year before I arrived, was the year he threw the teapot at Ardashir and all this, but, you know, he had, but he was quite a flamboyant figure. I always thought he was probably more to the left than anything else, but Hossein told me that, much to his surprise, actually, that summer when Hossein was going to Iran and I was already in Iran, that Qutbzadeh had approached Hossein and sort of to Hossein's surprise, said, well, I assume you'll see Bazargan and all this, and here's some things I want you to take to Bazargan, which Hossein did. And never, you know, as
this
I said,
is 63?
This is 62.
62.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as I said, Hossein, just in passing, when we were talking one night with some Americans a year or two ago here in Washington, this came up. Mm-hmm. And with that, I think I'll stop.
Okay.